Good morning. My name is Murali Basham. I'm a partner with the law firm of Basham Spiro, and I'm here with Amy Coates, who's a senior counsel with our firm.
Good morning, everybody.
And we handle corporate and family immigration law in all 50 states and around the world. And Amy and I are here today to discuss the road to citizenship.
Today we're going to go through just the basics of citizenship, really, what the benefits are, the requirements for most folks, the English and civics test, that we get a lot of questions on that, and also just general application, interview, and oath procedures. If you've had a chance to look at the citizenship application, at the very end there's a series of maybe 5 or 6 questions.
What's that form number again, just for the audience?
N-400. So the last 5 or 6 questions are about whether or not you support the principles of the Constitution. And, you do have to check off that you're willing to bear arms on behalf of the U.S. And to perform noncombatant services in the U.S. Armed Forces. And if you're not comfortable with that, then and you want to check no, then you have to justify your reasons on account of your religious or spiritual beliefs. And that's something that you need to seek advice on with an attorney about, because there's a letter that you need to write up to explain your beliefs.
Amy, in your experience doing these cases for a number of years, how difficult is it to get around that?
If you're a member of a religion, like, let's say, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses, they have a very long, their tradition is not to be involved in any sort of armed conflict. And I think most officers are aware of that. And they are going to expect a letter and that sort of thing, but that's pretty common. Now, if you're not a member of a certain religious organization, it doesn't mean you can't get this exemption, but it requires more explanation. The English test. The English test is basically one sentence that the officer shows you, and you have to read it, and then another sentence that the officer says out loud, and you have to write it down.
Would it be something like, what color is the sky?
No, because when they revised this test a couple of years ago, one great thing they did is they posted a list of vocabulary words. There's one list for reading, and there's another list for writing. And the sentences that they take are actually composed of those words. So if you know those words, and you're not tripped up by the accent of the examiner, you shouldn't have any trouble. Like, for example, if you look at the reading vocabulary words, one sentence that I hear sometimes at an interview is, when is Columbus Day? And if you were to look at those vocabulary words, you'd see, when is Columbus Day? I mean, those are all listed.
That really makes it a lot easier, doesn't it?
I think so.
That's a major improvement.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, yeah, that's pretty easy there. And then also, your ability just to answer the questions that they ask you throughout the interview. If you can't answer their questions and they're not understanding you, then that's going to pose a problem. Now, the civics test. This is very similar to how it was before they revised this a couple of years ago. It's still 100 questions that you have to memorize. The examiner is only going to ask you up to 10 questions, though, but you still have to memorize all 100. He will ask the questions aloud. You have to get 6 out of 10 correct, so it's not a writing test here. If you completely blank out on one of the questions, which happened to one of my clients the other day, it's not a big deal. You just ask to skip that one. And, more than likely, you're going to get the next one correct. The 100 questions are posted on the Internet, and really this is straight memorization. A lot of people ask me, what happens if I don't pass the test? Well, they will give you a second chance interview, and I would say that's probably going to be a couple of months after the first interview. So you have a chance to go back home and do a little bit more studying and try it again. And that has happened to a few clients along the way. There are exemptions from the English requirement, and you can see those on the PowerPoint. If you're over 50, you've been a permanent resident for 20 years, or you're over 55, you've been a permanent resident for 15 years. You don't have to take the English test, but you do have to take the civics exam. And you can take that in your own language and have an interpreter present to interpret it. If you're over 65 and you've been a permanent resident for 20 years, you get an easier civics test. And if you go online and you look at the 100 questions, they have an asterisk beside the ones that are on the easy test for people who are over 55 and been permanent residents for 20 years. There's also a waiver that you can apply for if you meet the requirements. You have to show that you have a disability or a mental impairment that prevents you from learning English or civics or demonstrating your knowledge of English or civics. And you have to have a doctor fill this out. It's a specific form from the Immigration Service. And the doctor has to really, he just can't say you're disabled. He's got to make the connection between what is your disability and how does this prevent you from learning or demonstrating your knowledge of English. If you have any questions about this waiver, feel free to email us. Our email address is at the end of the presentation. The basic application procedures, this is the form number and the website there where you can access the form and the instructions. Application fee is $680.
And that changes from time to time, right?
Yeah, well, it just went up $5 this fall.
That's a big change.
Well, it's better than some of the other fees. They went up a lot more. But the filing location, I believe they're down to two different filing locations now. It depends on your state, but it's on the form instructions. Our processing time at our local office, which is the Raleigh-Durham office, is about 5 months. And this is according to the Immigration Services website. This is also their national goal and the average at this time.
And it tends to go faster closer to election time, right, Amy?
I don't know. That's what people say. I'm not sure I've ever believed that. The interview is very straightforward, in my opinion. They literally start at the beginning of the application, ask you every single question straight through it, checking off your answers with a red pen as they go through it. They're definitely going to want to see your green card, your driver's license. They may ask to see your passport, and let's say you have a criminal conviction or something like that, or documentation that you registered for Selective Service. They're going to want to see those things. They'll give the English and the civics test, and then if they're comfortable with your case and that officer is going to recommend approval, they will forward it to a second officer to sign off on the case. And usually that's done while you're there waiting. When the interview's over and it's time for you to leave, you should at least have a recommended approval in your hand. And probably you're also going to have the oath notice, which is going to tell you the day and time that you return. Sometimes they're not able to do it that day, though, and you get the oath notice in the mail. Now, if they need something else from you, then they're not going to approve your case that day or give you a recommended approval. Instead, they're going to ask you to mail in the evidence or to come back on another day and submit the evidence requested.
Amy, we get this question sometimes, which is, on the N-400 form where you are required to list all your trips for the last 5 years or so, what if you take a number of trips back and forth to Canada and you really don't have that evidence of it? You can't remember exactly the date of each trip.
Right. Well, I'm working on a case right now for a gentleman who lived in California. And he went to Mexico a lot on the weekends, but he also went to Canada. And so what we're going to type on the application is, from the years, and I'm just making this up because I don't know the years, but from the years 1995 to the year 2000, I resided in, I believe it was like San Francisco, California. During that time period, I frequently visited my friends in, Vancouver, Canada, and also routinely traveled to Mexico for vacation. I do not remember the exact dates and times of these trips. Something like that, an explanation, whatever it is that particular person. Now, since the Immigration Service is requiring passports, it used to be that you didn't have to, show a passport. There may be a little bit more documentation. But I still don't think they're stamping those. So it's a case-by-case basis.
If we did not answer any of your questions, please do feel free to contact either me or Amy. Our email addresses and telephone number is on your screen right now. I do encourage you to visit our media library and do connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. We will have a webinar coming up next month on what to do about changing jobs during your permanent residency process and how that impacts the process. Thanks, everyone, for joining in today. We hope you have a great day.
Thank you.